Women's Health Matters on Talk About. Brought to you in association with the Scotia Clinic Rathas Tralee, specialists in fertility and menopause.
Now, Dr. Mary McCarthy, consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist from the Scotia Clinic here in Tralee, has joined us. Mary, great to see you as always. And we're going to talk a little bit about the fact that this is May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and you're going to talk a little bit about how women's hormones can relate to mood problems.
Yeah, I think it's an important topic because it often gets covered up a little bit, and the theme for May being Mental Health Awareness Month is Break the Stigma. And I think that's actually a really big part of it, that people often don't come forward with mood issues. I suppose the most common one we would see as gynecologists is that we would be very aware of postnatal depression, and that that is something that there has been a whole new drive within the HSE and within maternity care, that we now have perinatal mental health teams in the hospitals, and when pregnant women come to hospital, they're screened and they have various screening questionnaires, etc., done, and then we have midwives and a team that can work with them during the pregnancy to try and minimise the risks for that. But I suppose through all of women's lives at various stages, we see various kinds of mood issues, from very young people, just brand new adolescents, right up through to menopause and perimenopause. And I suppose the big issue is that people don't often identify it as a problem and don't seek help for it and feel embarrassed about it.
But just to start off, we'll say on the gynecological journey, as it were, a young girl with PMT starting out having periods the early years, PMT, premenstrual tension, and there's tears and emotions and all that. What hormone causes that, or how can you cure it?
Well, I suppose it's more about imbalances than anything else. And we know that there are three key hormones in this. Serotonin is a hormone produced in the brain. It's what we kind of a happy hormone, and it's very linked to estrogen. And if, you know, the two are linked together. So if you're very low estrogen and serotonin, people can feel a bit down. Progesterone equally can have a role in all of that. And sometimes, just take a classic example of someone I saw recently, a young girl who went on the pill for presumably contraception, and everyone around her noticed straight away that she was very down, very irritable, very cranky, and she stopped it. And she was right after that. She was her mood improved.
So the pill made her moody?
The pill actually made her moody. But in all of that, obviously people need to be able to have contraception. So we would look then maybe at, there are different pills with different progestogens in them and different progesterones, which one might suit someone better. And by definition, when we talk about premenstrual syndrome, it's where someone has a very clear pattern that for the weeks before their period starts, they have the irritability, they have the moodiness, crankiness, and when their period comes, it's just like a whole change, and they go back to being normal again for a while, and then the pattern might happen in the next cycle. And it's actually quite common. Then we now talk about something called PMDD, which is premenstrual dysphoric disorder, which is a really severe version of that. Wouldn't be very common, where people actually have just almost mental health issues for those 2 weeks in terms of depression, aggression, anxiety, and that they do need mental health help for it, which is really important. And it's important that people seek that help.
And then there's LMS. What's that? Severe LMS. No. I'm sorry, that was what was written down in front of me. Maybe that's a typo.
I think that's a typo, yeah. I'd say severe PMS is the PMDD. So, you know, it's about working with somebody, and it's important that when we see those people, say that person might come in and they might want to, they say, I can't take the pill, it made me feel terrible, then we mightn't use, say, the Marina Coil, because that has progestogen in it as well. We might look at different options for them. So it's important to look at that. And we also know that they're the people that probably later on in life are more at risk of having anxiety and depression problems around the time of the menopause, particularly if they've a history of postnatal depression. So it's about being aware of it, flagging it up, seeking help, and looking at what help is out there.
Is it inevitable that women will have PMT and PMS, or do some women not get it at all?
No, some women don't get it at all. And it's probably a lot of things. It's probably situational. It may not be always hormonal. There may be other things going on in people's lives that all come together to actually make it happen. And it can be very debilitating for people, and they get quite embarrassed about it. But there are lots and lots of solutions out there. We talked about the serotonin being the happy hormone, and if you have low serotonin levels, maybe that's linked into low estrogen. And then there is a group of drugs we call SSRIs. They would traditionally be used for depression and anxiety. And sometimes even simply for women taking them in high dose for a couple of days at the end of their cycle in the run into a period might help. So there are lots of different things. We'd look at homeopathy, acupuncture, vitamins, vitamin B6, high levels of vitamin B6 and vitamin E can be helpful. So there are a lot of different options out there for people.
And is it true that some women might have PMS at some part stage in their lives, maybe in their teens or their 20s, and then not at other stages in their lives?
Yeah, I suppose when I think of PMS, I think of it in older women. Because at that stage you're not ovulating, so your estrogen levels are probably quite low and your progesterone levels are quite low. So we would traditionally think of it in older women. Now the group of, and I said it to a young girl the other day and she was really quite taken aback, women with young girls and women with polycystic ovarian syndrome, there's 60% of those will have some mental health symptoms. So when you see it in young girls and you've eliminated the situational issues, it's often worth going back to look at hormones again.
So there's a link between the PCOS, polycystic ovaries, and the anxiety, depression, etc.
Absolutely, yeah. And the research would show that quite clearly, that young girls with PCOS, that they would have a higher prevalence in child mental health services, in eating disorder clinics. So that's an important thing to be aware of as well.
And about postnatal depression, you mentioned that at the outset, Mary. I would imagine that, like a lot of things, that a lot of women suffered in silence with that for many, many years. It's really only been spoken about in recent times.
And it is fantastic that our national maternity strategy has this built into it now, having perinatal mental health teams. And some women get antenatal depression, so it isn't always going to be postnatal. So that's important as well. And then the other important one is to be aware that some people get quite a lot of anxiety and depression after miscarriages. So they're often a very, very overlooked bunch of people as well.
Okay, very good. Well, look, we've a lot to kick off the questions with there, Mary, and I want to ask you about a menopause event you were at in Italy recently as well, which I know you took some interesting points from. Just to remind listeners, we've got some questions for Mary already, but if you would like to ask her anything in the whole realm of women's health, you can phone your question through to Brenda on 066 712 3666.
Women's Health Matters on Talk About. Brought to you in association with the Scotia Clinic Rathas Tralee. Specialists in fertility and menopause.
Now, Mary, as I mentioned before the break, you were in Italy recently in Florence. There was a meeting or a conference on menopause?
Yeah, right? It was a menopause conference. It's a European Menopause Society. I hadn't been to their meetings before. So it was actually, I suppose with COVID, we've lost out on a lot of these meetings. But it was a really, really good meeting. There were a lot of really interesting topics at it. And I suppose one of the things when we meet women who are in the menopause, perimenopause, one of the things that they get quite worried about, cancer is obviously the biggest worry people worry about, but dementia is becoming one now that people worry quite a lot about. And we had some really, really good talks on it. And I suppose one of the key messages that I took out of that part of the conference was that there are a lot of risk factors for dementia. The majority of us will never get dementia. And that if you actually get to 70 and you're kind of home and dry, but it was probably all about healthiness, and that was the key thing, looking at being healthy from a very young age. There were a lot of interesting risk factors that probably don't get highlighted enough, that say, for example, having hearing loss, having difficulties with your hearing can become a risk factor for dementia. Having brain injuries, and I don't mean a really bad brain injury where you fall off a horse or something, but even small little chronic injuries, maybe people get belts and as over the years, smoking, healthiness, keeping your brain active. That was a really huge thing. When you think about it, and they talked about one study done years ago with nuns in Boston, that they didn't get dementia. It's not just all about their clean lifestyle, but, you know, that they're learning new skills when they're older, doing crosswords, doing reading, doing different things. So being really active and being healthy. And every single talk we went to, it was all about the Mediterranean diet and eating, you know, healthy food, lack of processed foods in your diet, because we're all eating so much processed foods now. Cigarette smoking, obviously, risk factor always all along. And the good news was they felt that alcohol was probably a little bit protective, I suppose, in small measures. And then there was a lot as well, a lot of talk about heart disease and preventing heart disease, and that women don't realise how they are actually more at risk than men in some ways, that it presents differently. So I think there's a lot of scope for women to start thinking when they hit 40 about becoming healthy for the future. So, for example, if women have had high blood pressure in pregnancy, preeclampsia in pregnancy, they're probably more at risk of having high blood pressure later on. And the same with diabetes. So that prevention, we need to get more into our lives about having health checks. It's not big, huge health checks, but, you know, proper health checks, looking at how we live our lives. And it was a very good conference, but I thought the dementia one was very, very interesting. I will put a post up about it now soon, but it was about looking at small risk factors we never think about.
Okay, and it's quite heartening what you said at the outset, that it's not inevitable that
it's
we're
not
all going
inevitable.
To get it. You can avoid it, and there's a lot you can do yourself.
And they looked at the spectrum of it, and that even if and we now know there's a new drug coming on stream that same week I was there, that the Eli Lilly drug was announced, but that sometimes even intervening early on when someone starts to get mild cognitive dysfunction, that even intervening then might actually help. Okay. And I suppose the hearing impairment probably is about the socialisation. If you can't hear, you can't interact with people. If you're not, and then you become more isolated as well. And the more isolated you become, the more difficult it is to think properly.
It all adds up.
Yeah.
Now let's come to some questions. We've a 50-year-old female in full menopause for the last 7 years. Her problem is, she says, I can't shift the blasted belly fat. I'm on the HRT patch. Does this cause weight gain, and does it slow down my metabolism? I've never had belly fat, and it's very disheartening.
So she's 50 now, and she's been on HRT for 7 years. So she went into a relatively early menopause. So her HRT is actually very important for her, because that's what protects you from the risk of heart disease, whatever. So it's not that the patch causes the belly fat. It's that the menopause slows down your metabolism. And you have to look at strategies then to try and balance all of that out. But stopping HRT isn't one of them, because she needs her HRT. So we look at how we speed up metabolism, and how, and it does tend to be quite central, and people do tend to put the weight on their tummies. So it's about speeding up your metabolism, and it's about exercise. And you could run from here to eternity, and aerobic exercise is important, but resistance training is really important, because that builds muscle, and muscle burns calories. And then the kinds of food you eat as well. Looking at your, even worth looking at, doing a food diary, you're eating a lot of carbohydrates, and people think about carbohydrates as being all kinds of fats and things, or breads and things, but there can be hidden carbohydrates in a lot of our foods and sauces that we cook with or whatever. So back to what I said earlier, the Mediterranean diet. So it is about metabolism. And the other thing is that it's worth looking as well, if metabolism's really slow, whether thyroid dysfunction has kicked in, because often women who start in early menopause can have another autoimmune condition going on. So it might be worth a health check.
Now, a listener says she's 47 and her FSH level is 29. Okay. That's to do with fertility, is it?
Follicle stimulating hormone. Your pituitary gland in your brain produces follicle stimulating hormone to try and, it's a bit like, I always say to people, like trying to drive up a hill and you're accelerating. Your follicle stimulating hormone, neither of us are saying it well today, is trying to stimulate your ovaries to work. So if they're not working, you're producing more and more and more to make them work. So it's a marker of menopause and perimenopause.
Okay, so anyway, this lady is 47, her FSH is 29. She says she's still getting irregular periods. Sometimes she gets two in a month. She says, when can I expect my periods to stop or ease off? Also, can I only use progesterone cream, or must I take estrogen with it?
Okay,
so
there's a lot in that question, which is a good question. So I'm presuming that her FSH has been high on more than one occasion, and that is a marker. She's probably coming to the end of her perimenopause, possibly. You can never predict when her periods are going to stop. The average age of menopause in the British Isles is 52, so she probably has another couple of years to go. When she's asked about hormones and taking progesterone, I'm presuming she also has some menopause symptoms, which we know are hot flushes, sweats, joint pain, insomnia, maybe headaches, whatever. So it's estrogen you're trying to replace, not progesterone, when you're doing that. So if you're trying to replace hormones in the menopause and perimenopause, it's estrogen that people need. The progesterone comes into it to protect the lining of the womb from overgrowing when you're on estrogen. So estrogen's the primary one to get, and then the progesterone is an adjunct to that.
A lady in her 60s is on the HRT patch for 10 years plus. She says she has the coil in and she wanted to come off the HRT patch, but her GP says she can't as she still needs, she still has her womb. She says, will this prevent me from getting a heart attack? What do you think?
Okay, so let's look at that question a little bit. So anyone who's on HRT, we obviously revisit it every couple of years, and we normally say that around the 10-year mark, you'd be revisiting, does someone still need it? The GP must have a very good reason for talking about preventing heart disease. Maybe her risk is higher than usual, or their GP obviously has a good reason for saying that. If she comes off the HRT cold turkey, she may go straight back into getting menopause symptoms. So often what we would do is maybe taper down the dose gradually and see how people get on. But the coil is there, the Mirena, I'm presuming it's a Mirena coil, is there to be the progestogen we talked about earlier to protect the lining of the womb. So as long as she's on estrogen, she needs that. And it sounds like she probably, there's a lot of very good websites now that are worth going on to look for information. The North American Menopause Society is www.menopause.org, and then the International Menopause Society is www.imsociety.org. They have incredibly good webinars and videos for the public on those, and they cover cardiovascular disease, cover everything. They're absolutely fantastic. So I think she probably needs to go in, maybe look at a few of those, get the facts, understand where she's at 60, and that her GP obviously has a reason for leaving her on it, and then maybe go for an appointment with them.
I'm just going to squeeze two more in before we run out of time, Mary. A listener wants to know, can heavy periods lower your iron?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you're having heavy periods and you're losing blood and losing iron all of the time, and you're not balancing it by your iron intake, it will. Yeah, so it's worth investigating if someone thinks their iron is low.
And another listener, a female listener, says, do you need a GP referral to see Dr. McCaffrey?
Obviously, ideally, we'd love people to link in with their GP through us, because maybe when they go for the referral, the GP may be able to sort the issue. So it's ideal, but some people don't actually have GPs at the moment because some people are struggling to get GPs. So we would see them and probably try and get them to link back with a GP in the future.
Okay, so they can give a call anyway to the Scotia Clinic. And so, Mary, before we let you go, you're at the Scotia Clinic here in Tralee, if anyone wants to, and you're very active on social media.
Well, I like to think we are anyway. We're redoing our website at the minute, so the menopause is a big hot area of that, excuse the pun, that we're doing.
And you've had your open day in the meantime, haven't you?
No. I am literally running out the door now to blow up balloons and put up bunting for our guide dog open day with David Moran tomorrow. So we have Kerry ladies football in tomorrow, we have the guide dogs in tomorrow, and we have the Kerry senior footballers in, some of them, those that aren't playing, Mayo tomorrow. Yeah, so tomorrow's our open day.
At what time is that all kicking off?
11 o'clock, so that's where I'm galloping off now to blow up balloons and stuff.
Very good. Well, it'd be a good time to check out the Scottish.
And the weather is good this
very
time.
Good. Mary, thank you for all that. And we'll chat to you again next month.
Perfect.
All going well.
Thank you, Deirdre. 2:30,
folks, you're listening to Talk.